Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tucson Weekly and Tucson Local Media Executive Editor Jim Nintzel, and we're here to talk Zona Politics on KXEI 91.3 FM. Joining me today, Hank Stevenson, editor of the Yellow Sheet Report up in Phoenix. The Yellow Sheet is a gossip rag and kind of a what's going on at the legislature sort of publication published by the Arizona Capital Times. Hank, you've been editing that for, well, just this last year, right?
Yeah, a little bit less than a year so far.
And you just completed the legislative session, so I thought, hey, let's get together and find out what exactly our lawmakers did over the last 4 or 5 months. And why don't we just start with education, because the big Red for Ed stuff all went down last year. Teachers were set to get raises. Did the lawmakers come through with those raises, Hank?
They did. So last year they got a 10% of this 20 by 2020 plan. This year they got another 5% as promised. There's another 5% coming as long as the legislature follows through. I think they realize it would be political suicide to promise those raises and then not give them. So those are pretty much a sure thing at this point. You know, props to the lawmakers for not changing their minds mid-year. But they did have a lot of extra revenue this year. Revenues came in above projections. So it was kind of a dilemma of how to spend money this year rather than where to cut from, which is a new thing for lawmakers. And that's probably, you know, part of the reason that the legislative session went so long this year. It's much harder to divvy up money to spend than to slash and burn the state budget.
Yeah, and for listeners who aren't aware, we should just mention the Arizona legislature normally gets started in January. The goal is to hit 100 days. They sometimes do that. They sometimes go a little longer. They sometimes go a lot longer. So this session, a little longer than recent ones, but not terribly unusual to see it go all the way through Memorial Day weekend. And actually, they did the entire budget over Memorial Day weekend, Hank.
Yeah, that was a first. You know, usually they'll at least take that off, but they kind of got started the week before Memorial Day weekend kicked in. And then, you know, they kind of have to hold the lawmakers hostage once they've got a budget plan. They don't want them going back to their districts and getting chewed out by constituents or having second thoughts. So they ended up working through the weekend. And I think the Senate approved it might have been Tuesday morning in the early, early morning after having worked all Memorial Day Monday. So way to honor the troops.
This is not exactly a process that the public gets a very close look at. The budget comes out just before Memorial Day and is passed over that holiday.
Yeah, I think the lawmakers didn't even see the budget until Monday of that kind of Memorial Day, the week before. And in the House of Representatives, they were voting on, I think it was Thursday night. It all kind of blurs together. It might have even been Friday night. But even lawmakers just have a few days to digest the thing. They're supposed to keep it secret as long as possible. We've always got one or two sources at the Capitol who will kind of leak it to us. But this year, even our reporters didn't get much of an advance notice on this thing. It's a rush to digest what's in, you know, hundreds of pages of a state budget.
Yeah, it sounds like some smoke and mirrors in the back rooms. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about what else got in the education budget. There was some additional spending for some school facilities and also for textbooks and computers and other soft capital, as it's called.
Yeah, district additional assistance. Schools got a little bit more of that than they have in past years. There was also quite a bit of money in there, I think $20 million for either school resource officers, which are essentially cops, or for counselors. Jug Ducey had originally kind of offered up two pots of money that you could dip from to get a counselor or to get a school resource officer. And then Democrats in the legislature and even some Republicans said, hey, why don't we just let the districts decide what they need? So it all ended up going into one big pot of money. So schools that need counselors will have that opportunity in the coming school year. And schools that need cops will have that option as well.
And the education community is still disappointed by how much was put into education this year.
Yeah, so the Red for Ed movement, the teacher strike that happened last year, they had basically four or five bullet points. The teacher raises was one of them. They also wanted support staff raises. So that's anyone who's not a certified teacher, but is actually in the classroom. Those people haven't received any significant raises in many years through the recession. They also wanted basically a restoration of funding levels that Arizona had for education back before the recession. They said no new tax cuts until we're back to 2008 levels of education funding, which is crazy to think about that they're asking to go back a decade, and that would be an improvement, but it would be for schools. Those things haven't happened. They got the kind of top line item. Doug Ducey, very smartly, when they made those demands, came out quickly and said, okay, I'll give you the 20% raise. And that's what most people are going to remember, not kind of the second, third, fourth bullet point of their plan. And those second, third, fourth bullet points of the plan are not happening, at least not anytime soon. You know, the legislature is trying to add more money into education little by little, but it'll take many years to get back to 2008 levels. And in the meantime, they're practicing tax cuts.
That's right. There were about, what, $300 million in tax cuts as part of this budget?
Yeah, $320 million. You know, you could call it a tax cut. Republican lawmakers like to call it an offset of additional revenues that would be coming in due to federal changes in tax code and some other changes. But yeah, essentially, they gave up $320 million of revenue that would have otherwise come into the state coffers.
And on higher education, the university's got some one-time funding as part of this deal.
Yeah, so years ago, the legislature went and cut all funding for Pima Community College, Maricopa Community College, and seriously cut back the university's budgets by about $100 million. And that was $100 million of ongoing money. So think about over the past 5 years since that cut was made, maybe 4 years since that cut was made. That's $400 million that the universities have lost out on. So this year and last year, they put some additional one-time money into the university, but that's very different from putting ongoing money into the universities. And to kind of put it into perspective, I think it was $35 million this year compared to the $100 million that they were cut many years ago. So still a long way from being made whole from those recession-era cuts, but better than getting nothing. I think U of A got about $9 million out of it.
And Pima Community College, you mentioned they were zeroed out. I think they had been getting about $5 million a year from the state before that happened, but they did get a little windfall this year.
Yeah, they got a little bit of a windfall. The Pima Aviation Program, Doug Ducey had originally put in his budget that he wanted $20 million for the program. Lawmakers cut that down to $15 million for the program, but still pretty significant chunk of change for Pima Community College's aviation program.
And on the transportation fund front, Pima County has been advocating for some time about changing the kind of the enabling legislation that allowed them to create the Regional Transportation Authority down here way back in 2006 when voters approved a transportation plan that created a half-cent sales tax that has been used over the last, I guess, 12, 13 years now to do a variety of projects around town, including road widenings on streets like Grant and 22nd Street and elsewhere, as well as efforts to put in the modern streetcar downtown, for example. And this year, the legislature went ahead and said, Pima County, you can ask your voters to increase that to as much as a full cent and also perhaps change the way that money's used in order to use it for maintenance of your roads rather than just increasing capacity. But that one actually was a win that Pima County's been looking for a while.
Yeah, the legislature in recent years seemed to have warmed up in some ways to the RTA. This year it was part of a larger package that included some funding for the Maricopa County transportation project. So that may be, you know, why it was approved by the lawmakers, who often tend to favor Maricopa County projects and don't really think too much about what's going on down in Tucson. But as you said, voters will have to approve it here in Pima County before it becomes goes into effect.
Yeah, and we'll see exactly what kind of plan they hash out over the next few years as they go out to the public to revisit that. And if you're just joining us, I'm Jim Nintzel, editor of Tucson Weekly and also your host here for Zona Politics on KXEI 91.3 FM. And we are talking with Hank Stevenson, the editor of the Yellow Sheet Reports, with the Arizona Capital Times up in Phoenix. And we're wrapping up some of what was going on at the legislative session that wrapped up a few weeks ago. And Hank, there's also, if you travel up to Flagstaff, some additional money on the transportation front for Interstate 17.
Yeah, they're trying to expand I-17, particularly that piece just north of Phoenix. It gets down to kind of a two-lane highway out there. So they're trying to put some money into expanding that. They also gave a little bit more money back to cities and counties from the HERF fund, which is essentially gas taxes that the legislature had been sweeping for many years to pay for DPS officers. They've found a way to pay for DPS officers separately and are now giving that money back to cities and counties to kind of do their own transportation projects. So that's another one of those things that was very neglected over the last decade that lawmakers are trying to, again, start putting some money towards.
And you mentioned that they found a way to pay for DPS. However, that way was a fee, I think a $32 fee on our car registrations across the state. And in fact, it turns out lawmakers found out that was unpopular with many voters, and it's actually going to go away.
Yeah, not just unpopular. It was more than legislators were originally told that that fee was going to be. They essentially said you can establish a fee to pay for public safety and handed off that authority to the to a department director. When the fee came back as $32 rather than the $16 or $18 that they were expecting, lawmakers got an earful from, you know, average citizens who didn't want to pay an extra $32 to register their cars. So as part of the budget negotiations, Ducey very much didn't want to get rid of that fee. That was something that he had championed the previous year. But in order to get this budget through the legislature, he had to trade some horses, and that was one of the horses that got traded. So 2 years from now, if you don't have to register your car between now and then, you won't have to pay that fee. But until it actually goes away in another 2 years, we'll all be paying that $32.
Yeah, and it goes away right about the same time as Governor Ducey leaves office. So I guess it's somebody else's problem how they'll pay for that in the future. Let's talk quickly about the water situation. Some concerns about drought in the state and the water levels in Lake Mead, and the state came up with a way to continue to regulate this ourselves rather than turn it over to the federal government to make some decisions.
Yeah, there was a threat that if we didn't sign on to this multi-state compact known as the Drought Contingency Plan, that the federal government would essentially take over water management in the state. And that scared the bejesus out of lawmakers. So that was one of the first things that they did this legislative session. You know, water policy is super complicated, and I don't think there are even that many people in the legislature who understand it, but we got right up to that federal deadline before they came up with a plan that people could agree to, maybe because they thought it was a good plan, maybe because it was the lesser of two evils, just getting the federal government off of our backs. So it's a water conservation effort to some degree. It doesn't necessarily spell out efforts that the state will take to use less water or conserve more water. But it's kind of a Band-Aid, everyone agrees, and there will be much more to be done on that front in the future.
And it essentially allows farmers to start mining groundwater again, which I think environmentalists aren't too excited about.
Yeah, that was a major provision of the plan, especially down there in Pinal County. They give a bunch of money to farmers to kind of get new well equipment and things like that. But, you know, it's essentially robbing Peter to pay Paul. Instead of taking money out of or taking water out of Lake Mead, they'll be taking water out of, you know, reservoirs underneath Pinal County. So we're still going to use the same amount of water, but it makes it so that the the levels in the lakes and the reservoirs won't be dropping quite as rapidly as they have been in recent years.
And let's talk about weed, Hank. The legislature actually did pass some legislation regarding the medical marijuana program, and there might be some good news in there for medical marijuana cardholders.
Yeah, it was. There was some compromise legislation. Democrats even joined up with Republicans in passing this thing after getting some amendments on the bill. But there was a big bill from Senator David Gowen of Sierra Vista that would essentially test marijuana for pesticides and things. That's something Republicans have wanted to do for many years. And one of the concessions that Democrats were able to extract from Republicans for supporting that bill was to make the length of the card longer. So right now, medical marijuana cards have to be renewed every year, and that costs $150 in state fees plus whatever you pay to the doctor or whatever. Now those cards for the same fee will be lasting twice as long.
Assuming the Department of Health Services doesn't raise the fee.
Yes, which is always a possibility, but I think the intent was to not have that fee go up. And the Department of Health Services has already taken in far more money from the medical marijuana program than they can spend to regulate the program, because proceeds from that program have to be used to administer the medical marijuana program in the state. And they've just been sitting on millions of dollars. There was a lawsuit about this a couple of years back that ultimately didn't go anywhere. But the department has more money than it can spend on medical marijuana, and I think most people agree that it's probably time to start reducing those fees, and I think this was the way that legislative Democrats were able to get them to do it.
And at the very least, you won't have to pay the doctor every year.
Yes, that's true.
And let's talk real quick initiatives. There's a little bit of an effort to hamstring efforts for people who collect petitions to put propositions on the ballot.
Yeah, a little bit of an effort. Lawmakers, you know, this is an ongoing struggle with the legislature to try to rein in our initiative process. Lawmakers, of course, don't like the people having the ability to make laws. They think that's why we elect them. You know, a lot of the things that the legislature isn't willing to do that the people of Arizona overwhelmingly support, we've done via initiative, for example, giving women the right to vote or medical marijuana. So the legislature is kind of always at odds with the initiative process. And in recent years, they've made some pretty significant changes to try to make it harder to get things on the ballot, essentially. This year was no different, other than they've really made the big changes that they can make in the past. So it was kind of minor tweaks to make it to put more regulations on paid people who go around circulating those petitions at your local Safeway or whatever. When you see somebody outside at a table with a whole bunch of petitions to get something on the ballot, sometimes those people are volunteers, sometimes they're paid. But now it will be basically harder for them to do their jobs.
And you've got to put the initiatives in the right order when you turn them in, and all sorts of other Simon Says regulations that could get you tossed off the ballot.
They're getting down to the real ticky-tacky stuff nowadays. They've put in some pretty some stronger regulation of petition circulators and what has to be on petitions and what order in the past. And this year they just kind of took shots around the edges, I guess.
And if you're just joining us, I'm Jim Nintzel, your host for Zona Politics and editor of Tucson Weekly. I'm talking with Hank Stevenson, the editor of the Yellow Sheet Reports at the Arizona Capital Times. And Hank, we're also going to have earlier primary elections, moving to early August rather than late August.
Yeah, this was something lawmakers have debated for a few years. This year, they finally pulled the trigger. I guess that means we'll probably have a few fewer snowbirds voting. And, you know, for it kind of pushes back some other deadlines, which, impacts the politicians running for office, but your average everyday folk probably doesn't know when the election, the primary election is anyway. So 2 weeks, 3 weeks earlier, not going to make a whole lot of difference to your average Arizonan.
It just adds a couple of weeks to the season for us covering the elections, I guess. We can. It's like adding a couple extra weeks to NFL season or something.
Lucky us.
Yeah. Nunchucks, however, were also on the agenda this year. Folks who were disappointed that they couldn't swing nunchucks are going to be pretty happy.
Now we're talking about something everyday Arizonans care about, nunchucks. They were previously illegal back in the 70s. There was kind of this rush across the U.S. as Bruce Lee and his kung fu movies gained popularity. The kids were out there with sticks and ropes mimicking, martial artists. And there was this kind of anti-kung fu hysteria across the United States. Lots of states actually have nunchuck bans on the books. New York had a nunchuck ban on the book up until recently when it got struck down on Second Amendment grounds. This is something that, again, State Senator David Gowen of Sierra Vista has championed. He's also a martial artist. So lawmakers essentially took a little bit of time out of the legislative session to vote on this very important issue that will impact dozens of people in the state, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about sex. The legislature also, they did not actually tackle any major abortion issues this session, did they?
No, they tried to give a little bit of money to basically a group, a nonprofit that would try to talk women out of abortions, but even that failed. There's a very strong Christian lobby in this state known as Center for Arizona Policy. They in the past have been very aggressive about trying to make Arizona, the most or one of the most pro-life states in the union. But the Center for Arizona Policy director recently kind of said in a radio interview, which I thought was interesting, that they're not taking these broad swipes at Roe versus Wade that you've seen in other places like Alabama. And part of that is just because Arizona falls under the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one of the more progressive district appeals courts in the United States. And they've been, Arizona and other states within the Ninth Circuit have been repeatedly kind of shut down when they've tried to pass more extreme anti-abortion bills. But this one couldn't even get a couple million dollars for a kind of anti-abortion hotline to go into effect. So it was kind of interesting that the legislature didn't have the appetite for this for that this year.
But they did have an appetite for tackling the porn epidemic that is happening in the state.
They sure did. They passed a resolution, not a bill. It wasn't binding. It's essentially a postcard to nobody that declares porn a public health crisis in the state of Arizona. And I believe that might have even got a little bit of bipartisan support. I think there was a Phoenix Democratic lawmaker or two who voted for the thing. But it was kind of one of those odd projects that the legislature gives itself every year just to make a statement that they do not like pornography.
Right. That's a public health crisis. Measles, not so much. They didn't really move forward with limiting any of these vaccination exemptions, but they definitely tackled the porn.
Priorities.
Indeed. And also, they did repeal the, and I gotta say it, the no promo homo law. Talk about what that's about.
This is a law that was put on the books back in the 80s, I believe, kind of during the AIDS crisis. And it's, very backwards thinking compared to how most people think today. But it essentially said that you can't promote a homosexual lifestyle or suggest that there are safe ways of having homosexual intercourse are kind of the words in the law. It was a bit of a homophobic law. It's been on the books for a long time. I think probably the reason that we actually changed it this year is we got a Democratic superintendent of public instruction who made this one of her key policy platforms for the year and was able to get support from even Republican legislators to get rid of this law, to just pull it off the books.
And there was some legal pressure too, I think, from some concerns about a lawsuit, right?
Oh yeah, there was also a lawsuit filed. The Attorney General's office essentially looked at it and said, you know, we don't really want to defend the state from this lawsuit. And so that was kind of the springboard. But Kathy Hoffman, the Democratic superintendent of public instruction who replaced Diane Douglas, really put a lot of pressure in and brought attention to this issue. I think even when the lawsuit was filed, she was kind of standing out there with the plaintiffs discussing why this is a bad law that we should just repeal from the books.
And we have a new state drink.
Lemonade.
Not margaritas.
Not margaritas, not water, not even whiskey, but lemonade.
Well, that's great. We got about a minute left before we break for our own lemonade. And this was the second year in a row we saw a lawmaker leave the legislature.
Yes, the annual exercise of lawmakers having to get rid of one of their own. Last year, it was State Representative Dawn Shooter, who had been harassing women at the Capitol and beyond for many, many years, got caught up in the Me Too movement, was actually expelled from the legislature. He was one of the few who didn't have the good sense to resign. And this year, it was State Representative David Stringer from the Prescott area. He was convicted of child molestation back in the 80s, basically.
Oh, I was going to say, was he convicted? He was arrested on charges, and then it's kind of unclear about what exactly.
So his records were eventually expunged, so it makes the whole thing very murky. He was sentenced to a sexual deviance treatment plan. So I think it's safe to say he was convicted. He was forced to at least go through that as part of his plea deal. It is. It's all very murky. You could probably hear me hesitating to say that because I don't want him to sue me.
Right.
But the bottom line is there were some very disgusting police reports that the Phoenix New Times was able to dig up out of Maryland from the 1980s. Stringer's a lawyer, it should be noted, was able to somehow get his records expunged. They should have never been found, and he should have continued representing the people of Prescott at the Capitol. But thanks to the dogged reporting from the Phoenix New Times, that did not happen. His past came out. He was defiant almost till the end, just basically saying, you don't know the whole story. This is all liberal trash from the New Times. How can you trust a newspaper like that? But their reporting was spot on. Everything that they said and more turned out to be true as the House Ethics Committee investigated this thing. It just got worse and worse and more disgusting as we got more and more details from this. And eventually, under a threat that he was clearly going to be expelled, the votes were, I think it would have been a unanimous or darn near unanimous vote to get rid of him. He had the good sense to resign and go hide out in shame back in Prescott.
All right. You know, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guest, Hank Stevenson of the Yellow Sheet Report and Arizona Capital Times, filling us in on what happened up at the legislative session that wrapped up just after Memorial Day weekend. Hank, thanks so much for joining us here on KXEI.
Anytime.
I'm Jim Nensel. This has been Zona Politics, and we'll see you next week.
Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848. Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.